Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kimberly Schofield. I host Morning Edition on WILL AM 580, Illinois Classical FM 90.9, and here on Illinois Soul FM 101.1.
And I'm Reginald Hardwick, News and Public Affairs Director at Illinois Public Media. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul.
Early voting is underway for the March 17th primary. If you haven't already, make sure you're registered. Reginald, can you tell us what the difference is between our vote in March and in November?
Well, Kimberly, primaries are elections that political parties use to select candidates for the general election. After the March 17th primary, each of the party's chosen candidates will run against each other for the general election, which is in November. And this is a crucial year. It could determine if a Democratic or Republican Congress and U.S. Senate will be chosen, and thus enforcing a check on the power of President Donald J. Trump.
Champaign County voters are choosing a new county executive. Since congresspeople are chosen every 2 years, those of you listening in central Illinois may have to vote in the 2nd, 13th, or 15th congressional districts.
There are also two major statewide races. Democratic incumbent Governor J.B. Pritzker is running for re-election. There are several Republicans running to challenge Pritzker this fall, including former State Senator Darren Bailey, who lost the last time he ran against Pritzker. Researcher Ted Dabrowski and video gambling mogul Rick Heidner also want to take on Pritzker.
And there are 16, yes, count them, 16 candidates for U.S. Senate. This is an open seat because Dick Durbin, who has held the seat since 1997, is retiring. Among the Democratic frontrunners are Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy and two black women, Representative Robin Kelly and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton.
But did you know there are two other black women in this race? Republican Pamela Denise Long and Democratic candidate Awisi Korte Bustos are two of the lesser-known people in this U.S. Senate race. Since an earlier episode of Dialogue featured Kelly, Stratton, and Republican candidate Don Tracy, we thought you'd like to hear a little from the candidates Long and Bustos.
Brian Mackey, the host of our statewide talk show, The 21st Show, recently talked with both women, and we're going to bring you excerpts from those conversations.
Pamela Denise Long was born and raised in Mississippi, though her family history goes back several generations in the Metro East region of Illinois near St. Louis. She herself came to the area to attend Lewis and Clark Community College, where she earned an associate degree. Eventually, she earned an education doctoral degree in organizational development from Grand Canyon University, a private Christian school in Phoenix. Long has worked as an occupational therapist and more recently as a consultant. For several years, she was also an adjunct professor at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. In recent years, she's also written political commentary that's appeared in outlets including Newsweek and Real Clear Politics. All right, let's start with your early life. What was it like growing up in Mississippi?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I appreciate it now as a 52-year-old woman who is a mother myself. It was the best. It was the kids growing up in the country, making mud pies, building houses, exploring the bayous. I'm surprised all of us are alive and have all of our digits. You know, I didn't realize how poor we were because it just was what it was. But I appreciate it in hindsight.
You say, I've seen reported anyway, that you became a Republican in 2008.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so you know what? I was always excited to vote. It was almost like a rite of passage, right? To turn 18 and you can finally participate in this thing. You know, my grandmother wasn't particularly political, I don't think, but I do remember her talking about, you know, Ronald Reagan and a particular congressman who was in Mississippi. You know, she wasn't a fan of either of them, and I didn't think too much of it, but I was always aware that, you know, voting was a thing. I skipped to my polling place when I could cast a vote for the first time, but I wasn't politically conscious. And so I started to think about what my political values were and how political values should align with your action as a civic engagement. So when Barack Obama was running against Alan Keyes for this same U.S. Senate seat in 2003-4-ish, I really started to pay attention. And what really awakened me was standing outside my church on the morning that Barack Obama was going to speak, and someone had rented a mobile billboard that showed what happens with a baby with an abortion. And I remember the women around me being really upset that they had to see it. Like, how dare he do that? I'm assuming they thought Keyes did it, and maybe he did. But anyway, and it was remarkable to me that they weren't concerned about what they saw. And so, especially in front of a church. And so I started to just really pay attention to their race. I found it fascinating. And over time, as, you know, we were married and making more money and looking at, you know, talk radio and also PBS and all the other things, thinking about who do I want to be? How do I want to show up? And low taxation and pro-life and all of those things really resonated with me. And so for the first time in life, I joined a party and paid dues to be a member of something.
Yeah, it's interesting. Alan Keyes is a deep, deep cut in Illinois politics. He was brought in late in the campaign cycle, was trounced by Obama in that election.
Predictably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it came off as carpetbagging. He's a brilliant man, but that sort of not understanding, reading the room in blue Illinois, even then, and also just the racial politics of it, let's just call a thing, it just didn't look right. And I think for many people, it didn't land well.
How do you mean the racial politics?
Well, it's like, you know, the Republican Party is generally perceived as a white man's sort of party, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the idea that they brought Keyes in with no real significant ties to this area.
He's the way Maryland, that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. The way that Obama did, you know, this grassroots guy who's, you know, moving around the city of Chicago, you know, speaking for the people and all of that. It just didn't look right. It looked like he was brilliant man. Again, it looked like he was being a puppet.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So why do you want to be a United States senator?
You know, the funny part about it is I didn't want to be a United States senator. I looked at politics several times. People had asked me, you know, you should run because you have so many good ideas and you have so many strategies. I like your analysis. And I write a lot, right, is how I process my thoughts. I consulted with the Trump campaign back in 2023 as I was moving around D.C. doing consulting around public relations with immigration moderation, how to actually activate people to the awareness that mass immigration, both legal and illegal, we know that it affects Americans, right? It's a common sense thing, but it's also a data thing. I would tell people, they say, you should run. And I'm like, yeah, when Dick Durbin retires, I'll do it. Not thinking that Dick Durbin was going to retire anytime soon. And I think just the life and time and the political moment that we're in requires I do more than just write and ask other people to do the things that could and should be done. And so I had to have more skin in the game. So I decided to throw my hat in. And the more I talked with people traveling around the state, be it rural, urban, suburban, the more I wanted to run because we were resonating. And what they wanted to see is something that I believe I can do well. My grandmother didn't have a high school education. She just told me and my sister, education is the way. I don't know if she knew what that meant, but both of us like took it to the hilt. She's a doctor. I'm a doctor serving people. So I think that experienced politicians look at this and think there is no way a Republican is going to win in the blue state of Illinois. I'm not your average person. I am not a hardliner on politics. I think about the nuance of things. I speak truth to power, no matter who that power is. I believe in this country, and I had to fall out of love with it, to listening to all the stuff about how America hates Black people and, you know, blah, 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 and to fall in love with it. And so I'm here for the fight. And best case scenario, I'm a model of what our party should be. We should be able to speak to everyone, even if everyone doesn't get everything they need. But we should also be focused on problem solving rather than pointing fingers. And so I'm here to offer Illinoisans an opportunity for that. You know, and I'm here until March 17th. And if they feel so inclined, until November 3rd and the swearing in. So
how do you think about how the current U.S. Senate Republican majority has done in terms of working with or against or restraining the president in terms of his foreign policy stuff, right? Taking the leader of Venezuela, that sort of thing.
We have three co-equal branches of government for a reason. Our form of government, a republic, has always depended upon willful submission to the constraints baked into that by those in power, and a will of the people to enforce those constraints and hold people accountable. I would love to see Congress do more of its job. Rather than be directed by the president, who is there to implement the laws of Congress, I would like to see Congress do more advising, more enforcement, more of those types of things that really do show our diplomatic heft.
We are talking with Pamela Denise Long. She is a candidate for the Republican nomination for United States Senate. Let's talk about some other domestic policy areas. You mentioned that abortion, a pro-life billboard or something like that, was part of your political awakening, I guess you'd say. Do you think there should be a national law prohibiting abortion?
So we've already, the Supreme Court already returned access to abortion to the states, and most conservatives and Republicans who consider themselves pro-life, and there are pro-life Democrats as well, right, adhere to the three exceptions, rape, incest, and life of the mother. Yeah, which is a no-brainer. And I always stomp on life of the mother because it's such a, like, obviously we can't have two dead people on our hands. That would be insane. So my concern with, the answer is no. I struggle with the two exceptions because reality is that the baby's still a baby regardless of how it was conceived. I can't see myself supporting or going for an abortion. I also can't necessarily see myself forcing a woman who has been molested by her father or has been raped, forcing her to have a baby. So I have my personal sort of practice. And regardless of how a state regulates access to abortion, we cannot have the current situation we do, which is some states are so confused about if they can save the life of a mother who has an unviable or even actually dead child within her. We can't have that kind of lack of clarity because women are dying, like literally. That's not drama. That's not, you know, liberals saying things that aren't true. That's a reality that there are women who are dying because their doctors aren't sure what kind of a, you know, it's not even an abortion because the child is dead, but what they can do to actually remove a dead child from a woman. That's insane.
So how do you resolve that ambiguity? A national law that does what?
Well, for one thing, I think states need to be more clear about the implementation and guidance that they provide to physicians. I think that the healthcare providers within organizations who do training and development need to do a better job of understanding the law and training the healthcare, the physicians and others who would intervene in a situation like we described between a mother and an unviable child. They need to train them on the law and what they can do. So it's a failure at multiple levels.
What about LGBT rights? Should marriage remain legal?
Oh, absolutely. So I'm a libertarian in that regard. I don't care who you marry, like, for real. Well, let me just say, consenting adults who are unrelated, right? Because of, yeah. But otherwise, no, I've always been that way about that. Marry who you like. I also think you should be able to bequeath your stuff to whoever you like. I don't particularly care for an estate tax. If you've paid taxes on the goods that you have when you die, why should the person that you're bequeathing it to pay it as well? But yes, yes, absolutely.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the job that ICE and the Border Patrol are doing in places like Chicago and Minneapolis?
Oh, my goodness. So there's several points of assessment there, right? Their commitment to getting the job done, a 10 for sure, right? The public relations element of getting the job done, less so. I think there are people who are gravely concerned about what it looks like and actually how people are experiencing it, experiencing the immigration enforcement. For example, the idea and advocacy today that ICE should be able to enter your home without a warrant is, I'm a no.
There was a report that they have a memo that, for people who haven't seen this
leaked.
News, there was a memo that came out that apparently was dates to last May that said ICE can just enter in a home without a warrant.
Yeah, we're not doing that. And I think anyone who does that needs to be held accountable, and anyone facilitates that needs to be held accountable. So here, I'm a rule of law kind of gal. And so we cannot have government agents or officials who are advocating for things like that. You must have a warrant in order to enter someone's home. And I even have problems with the Patriot Act element where they're listening to us all the time. Right. And also selling our data. You know, there's a reason that when we say something around one of these devices that I look on my Facebook feed and, oh, look at that. It's Six Flags. And we just talked about it. So I have a problem with that as well. I do believe that Congress needs to be looking at what due process looks like for the 20 plus million people who were allowed to enter the nation against law. The truth is, the way that Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas, the impeached Department of Homeland Security secretary, allowed folks to come into the nation was against immigration law. No doubt about it. Having said that, we need to look at what due process is. And I think Congress needs to be leading that conversation. I agree with the president that those folks who have a an order to leave the country need to be escorted out. I do think it matters how we execute that. I did not want to see a situation where federal law enforcement, immigration enforcement was antagonistic with the people. And I think in many ways we are there. There are ways in which, of course, the people are very much upset that we're enforcing our immigration laws as well. Those laws have to be reinforced. So where's the balance? I think the people who are being violent with ICE agents need to be held accountable, and ICE agents who are being unnecessarily aggressive and or violent with the people need to be held accountable as well. There's enough accountability for everyone. We have to have people with the will to do it.
That was Republican U.S. Senate candidate Pamela Denise Long. She talked with the 21st Show host Brian Mackey back in January. If you want to hear her entire hour, go to 21stshow.org.
Long is one of four Black women running in the March 17th primary election in the U.S. Senate race. The other three Black women are in the Democratic Party. Representative Robin Kelly and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton have appeared on the 21st Show and here on Dialogue in the past few weeks. So let's introduce you to Owisi Korte-Bustos. She spoke with Brian Mackey earlier this month.
Owisi Korte-Bustos is running on the Democratic side. She previously worked for retiring Senator Dick Durbin for 5 years as one of his aides based in the Quad Cities. She's also worked for the state of Illinois as well as in the private sector, and she's a first-generation Ghanaian-American. She was born in Benin to two Ghanaian parents, one of whom was a diplomat and civil servant. Her childhood took her around the world, from the United States to Belgium, Ethiopia, and Cuba. She attended college in the U.S., earning a bachelor's degree in political science and government from Purdue University. After that, she worked as an intern for the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa and has worked in multiple capacities for the state of Illinois. Eventually, as I mentioned, she became an aide for Dick Durbin. And while she was doing that work, she earned a law degree from the University of Illinois Chicago. More recently, she served as senior policy advisor for the Illinois Department of Human Services. And before running for Senate, she moved into the world of nonprofits as executive director of the state's Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. All right. I mentioned you grew up all around the world. I wonder, tell me about that. What was that like being a diplomat's kid?
Well, thank you for asking. So I would say hindsight is always 20/20. As a child, it wasn't so fun. But now that I have the benefit of experience, I'm very much appreciative for the experiences, you know, living all over the world and engaging with people from diverse backgrounds and cultures on a very human level. You learn to see more of our collective similarities and what unifies us to the core as humans versus our differences. It also enables you to kind of function in any situation and adapt. And most importantly, you see the beauty of what makes us all human, of human beings in general, our hearts, the way we engage with family, the things that we value. And I think that's pretty neat as an adult to tie that into your love for humanity, for public service, for making a difference and impact in this world. And that pretty much drives why I do what I do.
The big question, why do you want to be a United States senator?
Well, honestly, when I look at the breadth and scope of all of my experiences, the question is, why not? Right? I mean, I've heard, you know, a lot of positives and, you know, I guess whatever the naysayers might be, but I don't anchor. And I think public service is not something that you are entitled to. It's a privilege. Serving people is a privilege. It's not easy to get up, especially in this political climate where politics and government and being a politician, I like to look at myself as a public servant, not a politician. It's like a four-letter word, right? But if you really focus on the why, from the experience as a nonprofit executive and the experience working at the intersection of policy and government, building and collaborating with some of the brightest minds and working on the social connectivity and the basics of governance and what public service should actually be. The answer is clear to me. I want to make an impact. I want to make a difference. And I want everyone to know that you don't have to come from a specific background or have a specific script. as long as you meet the requirements of what the Constitution says, as long as you're a genuine human and you really want to serve and make a difference in your life and in the lives of others and see the, you know, be the change that you want to see in the world, then ultimately, you know, what's meant to be will be. And it's a beautiful thing. So that's why I want to serve in this capacity, because I have the skill set and the passion, and I want to serve people and be a contributor.
So it's interesting because the field of Democratic candidates this year seems divided. There are at least three candidates who have long experience either in Congress or in Illinois politics, the Lieutenant Governor, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, Lieutenant Governor Stratton, and Congressman Raja Krishnamurti. And then there are a number of candidates like you who this would be their first time in elected office. Why aim so high, right? Why not start with the park board or school board or even state legislature?
I'm glad you asked that question. And so if you look at my career, and I know you have, so thank you for, you know, the background that you shared about me. It's the United States Senate seat is a very unique seat in terms of it's a policy seat. It's a diplomacy seat. It's a seat that you are the intersector and connector of not only the state of Illinois representing your state, but you're also connecting other states. You're also dealing with foreign policy and effectuating foreign policy. There's also a legal aspect and element to that. So asking me that question would be equivalent to asking me, why am I not a surgeon or a carpenter? It's not a question of something is above or beneath me or high or low. It's a question of what your passions are, what your specific unique skill sets are, and how you feel you can serve your country and your state. And this is where I have been passionate about, and my trajectory and my career has been very specific since I set foot in Springfield, Illinois. And this is the next step in my projection in order to be able to use all the collective experience that I have in order to serve the people of Illinois in a unique way that I think, especially in this climate, you need senators who have an understanding of foreign policy as well as the intricacies of downstate Illinois and Chicago. And what makes this country unique. So that's what I bring to the table, a different kind of experience, but nevertheless just as experienced and just as qualified.
All right, let's get into policy. What do you think about the Trump administration's capture of Venezuela's president last month?
I believe that was a sad day for international law, for international collaboration and state sovereignty. People can argue one way or the other based on which way you fall on the issue. But ultimately, the litmus test is if the same thing were reversed, if roles were reversed and another country did the same thing to the United States for the same reasons. And people could argue that Trump, being the president, is a very polarizing figure internationally. How would that cut, right? We've come along, and when we look at that, you think international law, diplomacy, foreign policy, the UN conventions, and all the things that hold the line only work if all parties are following by the rules.
It's been more than 2 years since Israel, or I should say Israel was attacked by Hamas back in October of 2023. There have been tens of thousands of Palestinians who were killed during that time. It was just within the last week that the last Israeli hostage's body was returned. There's been a lot of conversation about how to think about what's happening there. Do you think that Israel's response constitutes a genocide?
Absolutely. And we can go by, again, what the definition set by the United Nations. I mean, there is legal precedents and cases, South Africa and the lawsuit. So, and these definitions in theory and legally are there, but also morally and just by human norms and spirits. I mean, you know what carnage looks like. You know what disparaging and lack in proportionality and fairness and equity looks like.
We are talking today with Owisi Bustos, who is among the Democrats running to succeed Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. Let's talk about domestic policy. We've seen now the killing of two American citizens in Minneapolis, Alex Pretty and Renee Good. Should we abolish ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement?
I believe that there needs to be reform. There needs to be an adherence to the rights of U.S. citizens. Currently, this militarization of that department is in complete contradiction and violation to its intended purpose and also to what is allowed and prescribed by the Constitution. And so Congress really needs to go back to the drawing board and ensure that individuals who are hired to serve and protect are actually serving and protecting.
What can the federal government do to improve the economy, especially, you know, as you get farther down the income and wealth spectrum in American life?
I would say understanding how the tariffs and the U.S.'s foreign policy is actually affecting affordability and driving prices, ensuring that there is a balance in taxation where the wealthiest billionaires are paying their fair share, ensuring that all of the social services and safety net infrastructures that enable the most needy of society to survive, that we are actually approaching things with an eye for human dignity and human rights. But mainly, you know, these tariffs aren't helping. You know, there's so many economic policies that could be enacted, and having the right leadership and the right experts at the table to figure things out and think through what's working, what isn't working, and where the areas of opportunities are. But just on a broad stroke, just ensuring that the U.S. isn't really as reactionary as it has been in its foreign policy that actually does a lot more to harm American citizens, whether it's the farmers, whether it's the cost of produce, whether it's the cost of raw materials, whether it's our 401ks and our investments. All these things are affected by the instability and the chaos that is going on around the world.
Your campaign website, excuse me, your campaign's website mentions responsible AI policy as one of your platform points. What does that look like?
So what it looks like is ensuring that, for instance, you know, as AI advances and technology advances, we need to ensure that these advancements don't come at the expense of the environment. Some of these data centers and the amount of water that it's required, the amount of energy and emissions and weight on the planet, ensure that also this AI protects the right to privacy and information of people and children especially, and ensuring that AI isn't replacing human labor, right? It's meant to enhance and make better and help, but not putting people out of jobs and inevitably causing more of the disparities in the workforce and in the economy that affects people, and that it's actually building on skills and equipping people to thrive.
Sam in Springfield sent us a text message, wants to know if you would vote for a new Democratic leader to replace Schumer.
I would say currently with the state of affairs, I believe that it's time to have new leadership, right? I mean, I don't know the man personally. I can just go off of the policies and just being honest, he has been effective, but there's also areas of opportunities. But most importantly, there needs to be a looking at what the future holds and what the future of the Democratic Party should be. And it's not with people who've been in office for 40 years continuing to hold power and direct the party.
Worth noting, your old boss is the number two to Schumer among Democrats in the Senate. Awise Bustos is among the Democrats running for United States Senate in the Democratic primary.
That was Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Oisi Corte Bustos. She talked with the 21st Show host Brian Mackey earlier this month. If you want to hear her entire hour, go to 21stshow.org. And we're talking more politics next week. We'll look into two congressional races here in central Illinois, including one linked to a political dynasty in our state. And the Champaign County Elections Office has a message for you if you like to vote by mail. That's next week on Dialogue. And that's all for this episode of Dialogue. Our contributors this week were Brian Mackey, Kimberly Schofield, and myself. Our theme is composed by Lamont Holden. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Don't forget to register to vote. And we'll talk with you again next time.